I was wondering if you could tell the story of how the film kind of came to be.
Well, look, I live in Belfast, and I kind of moved here about 6 years ago now. It's been a couple of weeks of getting here. I walked into a bar where a local band were playing called Kneecap, and the rest is history. I was blown away by them. I thought they had an amazing stage presence. Their music sort of resonated with me. I didn't understand a bloody word that they were speaking. but, you know, there was a 500 or so young people in the crowd rapping every word in Irish back to them. And so as much as I was interested in them as performers, I was really intrigued by the fact that there was this young, vibrant community of Gaelgors, as we call them, Irish language speakers, living in an urban centre like Belfast, because that I kind of assumed the language was very rural, that it was kind of, you know, pretty much dead. And so that was kind of a revelation. And at the time, there was a sort of political fight going on to try and get official recognition of the Irish language in the north of Ireland. And I thought there was a really interesting juxtaposition between what was happening on a political level, which was nothing really, it was kind of just a logjam, and, you know, this kind of underground movement that was developing of young people embracing the language, of which Kneecap were at the forefront. I was intrigued by the idea of doing a biopic in real time. I feel like the biopic genre was something that had kind of been done to death. And what, you know, was there a way of reinventing that genre by doing it rather than a band at the end of their career, looking back? Was there a way to do a biopic when a band's at the beginning of their career? Like, what would that even be? To do a tri-protagonist film is very difficult, to have three main characters. And that was one thing that the lads were insistent upon from the start, is that no one could be the lead, right? They all needed to be the lead. And that posed a real problem for me, because you sort of go out and go, right, well, let me try and watch all the tri-protagonist films that I can see, to just see how it's done, to just try and get a sense of how they're structured. And then you realise there isn't really any. And you go, well, that's a bit ominous. Does that mean that's because people have tried and absolutely failed? And so, yeah, just to try and weave three narrative arcs together within a 100-odd minutes.
You did such a good job of making you care equally about all of the protagonists, which, as you were saying, is a very hard thing to do, to not have one character kind of prevail.
I remember the fun we had when I turned up with a script that had Liam O doing the narration, and Nisha and JJ were like, hang on, you can't be the narrator. We want to be, can we all be the narrators? I was like, lads, it's not that easy. Like, you can't all be the narrators. Like, one of you is going to have to be the narrator. And it's Liam O, because I fucking decided.
I actually really loved the narration. It striked me quite a lot. Why was it that you decided to have it?
I actually hate narration.
Really?
Like, it's something that it's a bugbear of mine. I think it's on a kind of a snobby level. I sometimes think that it's lazy. And you know, if you take the idea that the best possible film you could make has no words, right? Mm. Film is a visual medium. And so I spent a long time with the script working on it without any narration, and was really resistant to the idea of narration until I got to the point where I was like, this is so complicated what you're trying to do, trying to, you know, cover all this ground to do with the politics of the place, to do with their life. There was just so much going on that eventually I went, you know what, you're biting off your nose to spite your face here. Like, this is a film, if ever there was one, that could do with some narration, right? And so once I'd accepted it, was like, okay, right, hold your nose, have fun with it, find a way to do the narration that kind of feels true to the style. And yeah, I can't imagine the film now without the narration. Do you know what I mean? It allows stylistically an ability for us to jump around timelines and to sort of play with the form. And I don't think we could have done that without the narrative, the kind of voiceover that Liam O gives. You know, there was a lot of trial and error on it to get it right. But, you know, it was certainly, the film from start to finish was a labour of love. And I was very obsessive over the fact that, you know, there was not a single thing in this film that I was not going to make sure was 100% as good as I could make it. And as creative and inventive. And, you know, I think that it's very difficult to get the opportunity to to make a narrative feature, you're asking people to give you millions of pounds of money. And when it's sort of a fair, you know, I'd made documentaries, I've made short films before, but, you know, I'd worked for a long time to get that opportunity to make my feature. And I was like, you know what? It doesn't really matter whether you succeed or fail, but you have to, if you're going to fail, at least be able to fail on your own terms. And so for me, it was like, I was going to make this film exactly how I wanted it to be. And I could come to peace then with the idea, if it didn't work for audiences, then so be it. But at least I could sort of sleep easy in the fact that, you know, it was a film that was true to me.
I have one more question, which is a bit sillier. I've always been really interested in the way that different highs are depicted on screen. I guess like from when I was a little kid and then now as an adult, it's obviously a different interest in it. But as opposed to, you know, some of them are like party scenes that you see in lots of films. And then you've made some pretty strong creative choices with some of the other drug scenes. Yeah, obviously what inspires them, I know that, but.
me and the band, you know, we definitely felt like often drug scenes in films are a bit lazy. All kind of, you know, it's kind of like, it's
fish eye lens.
Yeah, it's just a bit like, oh, okay, we've kind of seen it and we're like, well, if we're gonna do drug scenes, they need to feel different. And you know, we basically went, right, how can we depict, particularly ketamine was an interesting one, because you don't, it's not a drug that you see depicted on screen very often.
Yeah.
And so we were like, okay, let's you know, let's try and work out how we can play around with this. And yeah, and you end up with sort of random claymation scenes. But weirdly, we were like, the claymation thing is based on a cult 90s series in Ireland called Pulling the Devil by the Tail. You can see it on YouTube. And we were watching it one day, just play at one of their houses, and we may well have done a bit of ketamine. And we were like, this claymation, it's very ketty. It's like claymation is a very ketty sort of, I don't know, kind of form of animation. Yeah, we kind of got it in our heads it's quite a good depiction of ketamine in its own weird way. And so, yeah, ended up in the film. And then, you know, the dance that then playing the gig, you know, yet again, it's just the weirdness of a drug like ketamine. It's just quite fun to try and depict on screen, I think.
Yeah, and I loved the bus scene as well.
Well, the bus scene's another one. That was something that I had in my head for ages now, for years. And I think that's from, like, being younger and going raving in London. And those sort of like 7-8 in the morning, you'd be on the tube heading home or heading to another party or something. And just how much of a, how public transport does not mix well when you're high. And it's just like that really stark lighting and everything like that. And I don't know, one day I was tripping balls on the tube in London. And I swear everyone was wearing the same stuff as the seats. And it was literally 20 years ago that happened. And, you know, it stuck with me. It was like, it was a weird thing. It's like, no way is everyone wearing the same stuff as the, and anyway, it does make me laugh that, you know, some weird experience, high as a kite, when I was in my early 20s, has ended up in a movie 20 years later.
I think it said verbatim as well, drugs and public transport don't mix.
Don't mix, yeah. There's a lesson for the kids out there.
There I'm going to give you space to talk about the importance of revitalization of language, because that's a huge theme of the film and of Kneecap's work as well. And well, you said that you had family in Auckland, so you already know and understand the parallels that we have here in Aotearoa. Yeah, did you want to talk a bit about the importance of language?
Yeah, I think that the protection of Indigenous language and culture is an issue which isn't probably given enough kind of focus by people, particularly with language. You know, once a language has died, it's gone forever, and what goes with it is a history of a people, a time, a place, and we are moving towards a world that is going to be very, very homogeneous in the sense of English being dominant, and that's not a world where we're going to be enriched as people. And, you know, it's kind of like the environment. Once it's, you know, you've destroyed it, you've destroyed it. There's no getting it back. And I think that, you know, language works in the same way. And so, you know, we made a film that was very specific to a language battle that is happening in the north of Ireland. we didn't really have at the time a sense of you know, this film being about a broader global struggle. But we were, you know, once the film was made and we started sort of previewing it and realized that the battle that was happening in Belfast and in the north of Ireland was kind of being played out across the globe, we realized that the film had the potential to tell a much bigger story and to find a bigger audience. And we're really happy that, you know, traveling around the world with a film, it seems to have resonated with people from all sorts of different backgrounds and cultures, who have found something at the heart of the film that touches them and speaks to their own lived reality.